Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette. I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. And as usual, sitting across from me is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Change the scheme, alter the mood, electrify the boys and girls, if you'd be so kind.
All right, then. Yeah, I have to say, he's got the presentation down, at least I think so.
Thank you.
You can't see it, so you guys are missing.
There was a lot of arm gestures in there. There was a little flailing, but I was not all lit up for that particular quote. So if you know where that quote comes from, you know why I said that. But we're going to talk about something actually a little serious, actually quite a bit serious today. Something that has been in the news recently at the time of the recording of this podcast, which is very early February 2011. Mm-hmm. And that is the idea of an internet kill switch, some sort of ability for a person or government or organization to shut down the internet, or at least our access to the internet.
Right. Now, what spurred this was the events in Egypt that are going on as Jonathan and I are actually recording this. I'm sure by the time you will be listening to this, the fallout will still be relevant to what's going on.
Sure.
But one of the things, if you are not paying attention to current events in the world right now, you may be unaware that there have been, in late January and early February 2011, a series of protests by people who have been asking the Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak, to step down from office. He has, as of this point, been in office for more than 30 years, mm-hmm. I believe, took office after the president Anwar Sadat was assassinated, which I remember from my grade school days. You may be saying, what does this have to do with technology? Well, in order to prevent the ability of people who are protesting the government's really protesting and asking Mubarak to step down from organizing using internet-based tools such as social networking sites, Twitter, Facebook, etc. The Egyptian government basically shut off access to the internet to people within the country. Now, there was one network that stayed up a little longer than the rest. I believe it was the Noor Group was able to provide internet access a little bit after that, but they eventually went dark as well. And the internet was down for about 5 days within Egypt. The reason this is valid to many of us who are listening in the United States, it had been proposed, I guess, really 2010, the possibility that to prevent cyber attacks on certain infrastructure, electronic infrastructure in the United States, that the president of the United States would be given the ability to shut down parts of the internet within the country.
Right.
Theoretically.
Right.
Now, the question is, can that really be done?
Right. So let's clear up a couple of things, because obviously the case in Egypt got a lot of people worried, because the thought was, well, what if our government, what if the United States government, of course, Chris and I are in the United States, so that's why when I say our government, I'm talking about them. What if the government, for some reason, wanted to try and suppress civilian communication? Would this give the government the power, specifically the president, the power to make communication lines go dark?
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's a scary thought, because so much of what we do now depends upon the internet in one way or another. It may not even directly depend on it, but indirectly it will.
Yes.
And so people have gotten really sensitive about the subject. The government, for its part, has said that a lot of the fear is based upon misinterpretations of the proposed act, which is called the Protecting Cyberspace as a National Asset Act of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
It was introduced by Joseph Lieberman.
Yes.
And it was introduced originally in June of 2010. It has since undergone revisions, which somewhat define some of the terms to a greater extent, because the original act had some loose language in it that definitely had people scared.
Yeah, yeah.
But like Chris was saying, the intent of the act, at least as it is worded, is not to be able to manipulate the internet in order to hamper communication among citizens or to infringe upon First Amendment rights.
Mm-hmm.
It is, as he was saying, to protect our infrastructure in the case of a cyber attack.
Right. I think people have interpreted that to mean that citizens living within the United States would not be able to access the internet at all anymore.
Right.
And I think if I have read the act correctly, what the intent is actually to shut down links to certain infrastructure items from the internet. So it wouldn't keep people off the internet. It would say if you had an electric station that were connected to the internet, it would shut access off between the electric generating station and the internet so that it could not be reached that way. Now, I mean, that's the way I've read it. As a matter of fact, Senator Lieberman and Ranking Member Susan Collins and Senator Tom Carper actually released a statement on February 1st about, you know, drawing the parallel between the situation in Egypt and this act. And they denounced the Mubarak government's actions in shutting down all internet communications in Egypt, and attempted to clarify on that. And for instance, they mentioned that the Communications Act of 1934 does give the president some control over radio communications providers,
right,
and wire providers.
Right.
Say wire, people don't really exactly use it that way, but yeah.
Yeah, their point was that the act, the 1934 act, was would give the president such broad powers mm-hmm. as to, in effect, allow the president to do what we're talking about right now, which yeah. Is control or shut down sections of the internet under certain situations.
Right.
And so
communications channels.
Right. Yeah. Right. And part of that depends upon you interpreting the act to extend to internet communication. I mean, it's not as, I mean, clearly when it was written in 1934, it was not about the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was about telegraphs and telephone lines mainly. To extend it to the internet now would require a little bit of interpretation, and I'm
right.
sure you would have people challenging, saying,
"Oh, sure,
this goes beyond the intent of the original act." But intent and letter sometimes get a little muddied in these situations.
Mm-hmm.
So Lieberman's point was that the Asset Act was really to define the limitations and the specific situations in which the president could use this power, as opposed to the 1934 one, which was much more broad.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, specifically, the bill, at least according to the statement and the clarification that I was speaking of just a moment ago, they issued a series of clarifications, one being that it's supposed to be the most critical assets available to the internet, including infrastructure to run the country and the economy.
Yeah.
Also, it has to be – I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say I actually have the definition for that because it comes from the U.S. Patriot Act.
Okay.
The critical infrastructure is defined in this way. It says, the term critical infrastructure means systems and assets, whether physical or virtual, so vital to the United States that the incapacity or destruction of such systems and assets would have a debilitating impact on security, national economic security, national public health or safety, or any combination of those matters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Asset Act that Lieberman mm-hmm. introduced further defines it and actually adds in some stuff that made some people nervous, including...
Sure.
Information providers,
yeah,
which could essentially be ISPs.
Mm-hmm. He went on in the statement to say that it would require the president to, if there was an ongoing or imminent attack, that's a quote, that could cause national or regional catastrophic events. That's the kind of thing that would have to be going on for the president to use this power. And he or she, the president, in this case, President Obama, but whomever after later on down the road, assuming this stays in place,
mm-hmm.
would have to use the least disruptive means feasible. Again, a quote. They would have to notify Congress. It wouldn't be able to be continued for more than 120 days without approval from Congress.
30-day blocks up to 120 days, mm-hmm. and then at that point you must have congressional approval to continue it.
Mm-hmm. And the bill also, they, according to the statement, specifically forbids actions that would violate the First Amendment and would not prevent internet traffic, email, and other forms of communication unless they're involved with critical infrastructure. So if you were IMing a friend on a typical social network, that would not be considered critical infrastructure. You
right.
should theoretically be able to continue to do that.
Yeah, you should still be able to use things like Facebook or Twitter to organize groups and to, you know, do whatever it is you want to do to have those peaceable public gatherings, that kind of thing. The another element I remember reading about was that when we're talking critical infrastructure, the example they use was Hoover Dam.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But yeah, that's what we're really talking about. When we're talking about critical infrastructure, we're talking about things like power grids.
Water supply,
nuclear power plants.
Mm-hmm. Military
infrastructures, yes. Stuff that, were it to be compromised, would mean a terrible, terrible outcome for the citizens of the United States of America.
Right. I assume they would also, when they mention economy, we're talking about things like Wall Street, the stock exchanges,
right.
things like that. They would want to be careful to protect that infrastructure as well.
And if we apply a little critical thinking to the situation and really think about, you know, is this is what the government is telling us, is that really what they mean? Like, in other words,
sure.
Does it really, you know, because of course we should be skeptical. We should question our government, but not blindingly, right? We shouldn't just assume that what they're telling us is a fib, but we should definitely
look into it to
look
learn
into
more.
It. Right. Mm-hmm. And so part of looking into it means, all right, well, do I believe that the government would not abuse this power in such a way to somehow,
right.
like, let's say that WikiLeaks.
Sure.
Let's say that the government decides, hey, you know what? WikiLeaks is creating a true danger to national security.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is now command all ISPs in the United States to block WikiLeaks so that people in the United States can no longer access it. That's something that people were worried about. Well, under this act, at least in theory, you would not be able to do that unless there were a real perceived threat,
mm-hmm.
like an actual cybersecurity attack
right.
going on that involved WikiLeaks in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you would not be allowed to just tell all the ISPs to block it. That doesn't mean that an ISP couldn't choose to block it.
Right.
I mean, they can because those are private companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the criticisms I've seen of this had nothing to do with the potential violation of First Amendment rights. It
mm-hmm.
had more to do with why is it the government telling private businesses how to protect themselves when private businesses are decades ahead of the government as far as cybersecurity is concerned?
Mm-hmm.
Which that's a viable question. I mean, the kind of extreme case that I've seen is saying, how can the lawyers and the politicians who are part of Homeland Security, who have no experience in IT security at all, how can they expect to improve our practices when we do this for a living?
Right.
This is how we build our business. This is how we provide our services. We know how to do this. How is someone else who has no experience in this going to help?
Mm-hmm.
That's a legitimate question. You could ask, well, why does the president need this power in the first place? Because let's say that you are an engineer at Hoover Dam,
mm-hmm.
and you detect that there is some sort of cyber intruder or a threat to the infrastructure, the computer infrastructure at Hoover Dam. There's a pretty good chance that engineer is going to say, you know what? We need to shut this down. We have to close off our portals to the outside world as far as the virtual portals are concerned and,
mm-hmm.
and take care of this problem. Why is there a need for a government intervention? And that's a good question to ask. You know, that's probably a more appropriate question to ask rather than is the government going to shut down Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's less likely to happen. And I think that, again, when you think about this critically, the government taking strides to say shut down the internet. Let's take the most extreme case.
Right.
That the government for some reason has decided to shut down our access to the internet so that no one in the United States can now get on any sort of internet service.
Mm-hmm.
There would be chaos.
Yeah.
And you would not solve any problems that way.
Right.
Right? That would just create even more anger and distrust in the public. I can't imagine any sane government official saying this is a good idea because there's very little chance that a positive outcome will happen as a result of it.
Right. And I think to some degree we've seen that in what happened in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but people in Egypt found unique ways to continue getting their message across.
Sure.
I was doing some reading in preparation for the podcast about some of the things that they were doing. They were initially using the tools that so many of us use, different messaging and social networking tools. But when the internet blockage came down, as a matter of fact, I was reading an article by Eleanor Mills, who wrote that on January 26th, one of the CNET writers. And she said that people were using, you know, regular phones, fax machines, ham radio. Remember, we did our podcast on ham radio some time ago now. You know, even dial-up modem usage started to go up again. So people had access to those tools. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't shut down the phone networks, just the internet. At least I didn't read anything that indicated that they shut down the traditional phone networks. And in addition, Google and Twitter started a service for posting tweets without an internet connection. Basically, speak to tweet allowed people to say what they wanted to say, and it would transfer it to a Twitter message with the hashtag Egypt added on to the end of it.
Right.
So it, you know, outside organizations were actually helping protesters get the word out. So, I mean, I think it would be very difficult to shut it down completely. And in some cases, too, I believe they were using mesh networks.
Right.
Which I can't remember if we've ever mentioned that on the podcast, but we definitely need to do something on that because I think it's really cool. One laptop per child also uses mesh networks.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of ad hoc networks, usually wireless
yep.
networks, if I'm not mistaken. And they don't use the typical infrastructure. And in a lot of cases, places like in places where they use the one laptop per child product, we're talking about places that don't have that infrastructure in place. They don't have hardwired phone lines and cable connections. So they use these local networks, local internet networks that aren't actually connected to the internet, but they are a small wireless network. I shouldn't have used internet in that case.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, people were communicating using those as well. So I don't think even if the government shut everything down, I don't think it would the traditional infrastructure. I don't think it would take long before people found new ways to get in touch with one another, especially considering the tools we've been given.
And further, another point I would suggest that mm-hmm. says the government would be very reticent to take such an extreme action as to shut down the internet. So you've already got the one case where, you know, you would infuriate your citizens.
Yes.
And
you don't really want to do that.
There's really, yeah. How would you make things better after that?
Yeah.
Right?
Especially if ostensibly your goal is eventually to come out of this with a peaceful resolution.
You would essentially end up losing the trust of the citizens. And mm-hmm. in a representative government, that means that your government's no longer valid.
Yep.
If the citizens no longer trust in the government that represents them, you know, assuming that you continue to be a democracy, mm-hmm. that pretty much means you have guaranteed you are out the door as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. In fact, probably before even elections would roll around. So that's one part. But another part is the fact that so many businesses rely upon the internet.
Yes.
Particularly in the United States, but all around the world. And, of course, you know, the internet has made the world a global, a true global economy.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got businesses that are centered in America that would be deeply affected, but you've got businesses in other countries as well that have interests in America. They
yeah.
have infrastructure in America that would be very much affected by the internet being shut down within the borders of the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about losing billions of dollars worth of revenue and doing intense economic damage. In fact, one might be able to argue that shutting down the internet would cause more damage economically than if you had let the internet stay up,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that, you know, one of the guidelines to this act is that you would only invoke it if there were an imminent threat to national economic security. Well, if you were to shut down the whole internet, you would create that threat, actually. That's the other reason I don't think it's very likely to happen in the United States. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't see this act put into place or even taken advantage of. It's just that I think we would be more likely to see it the way that we're told it's intended,
mm-hmm.
right? So that if there were a concentrated attack, say, on the Pentagon,
mm-hmm.
that the president would have the authority to tell Pentagon officials, all right, close off all routes to the internet
right.
until we resolve this. Again, you could argue, why does this even need to be a presidential thing? But you could also argue, well, what if you have some company that is, or some person, some organization that is in some way partnering with these attacks. That, you know, maybe it's not that they're the victim, but are rather a conspirator, you know, a co-conspirator. Well, in that case, you do have to maybe rely on a higher authority than just the company head to take control of the situation and to try and limit whatever harm could come of it. It's still scary.
Yeah.
You know, you see, we've seen this happen before, not just in Egypt. We also, in Iran, we saw it a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Where there were the Iranian protests also, a lot of people were trying to organize through Twitter and Facebook. And we saw that the Iranian government tried to confuse the issue as much as possible.
Yes.
Or at least those were the allegations.
Right.
I mean, it's hard for me to say. I can't understand the language, so I have to rely upon the reports I'm seeing. And some of the reports were not necessarily the most unbiased. So it's hard for me to draw my conclusions, but that's based upon the information that I encountered.
Yeah, it's it definitely shows how dependent we are on the internet for all kinds of things. The outcry over something like this would not have been nearly as serious in, say, 1994 as it is now, because so many people are you know, use the internet for communication, keeping up with friends and family, and for commerce, that, you know, we've come to expect that it's, you know, I've actually heard the idea thrown out in the last few days that internet access may be considered a human right.
Yeah.
Which is that's sort of a topic for another podcast, really. But, you know, I don't think this would have even been considered a few years ago. And now the idea that you might have a right to access this, you know, amazing communications tool that we all use now, you know, it's funny because I wouldn't have necessarily thought of that just a few years ago. But now so many people are relying on it that it is a reasonable debate to have whether or not it's a human right to have that kind of access. But these tools have also made it possible for protesters and demonstrators, whether they are peaceful or violent, to organize in ways that they haven't been before. So it's scary for governments, too.
Sure.
I mean, the Iranian government had a hard time because the mobs, or it wasn't in Iran, it was, where was it, Belarus? That was even before that, where mobs would gather by text message. They would say, okay, be at the square at 12:07.
It was a true flash mob.
It was a flash mob. People would show up. They would start to protest. The authorities would come to crack down on them, and they would have already disseminated the location of the next gathering. So by the time the authorities converged on the area, they were gone. The protesters had gone. They had converged on a new area, and they were able to stay one or maybe even five steps of the authorities by using these tools. It makes sense that a government would want to be able to do that in those instances. So that, I think, too, is why it seems scary, because people go, yeah, you know what? They might want to do that. And what if they do it to me? I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, we've seen the precedent, which is what makes it scary. But
you see, I could see the other side, why they would want to crack down.
Certainly. It is definitely a scary threat. It's one of those that the more you think about, the more you realize it's less likely to happen in the United States. Now, I will never say it's impossible.
No, I don't. Right? I don't think it's impossible anywhere.
It would be monumentally surprising to me if it did happen in the United States.
Yeah.
Simply for the reasons I stated before, which is that, I think essentially you would have to have a president who was saying, you know what, I'm going to discard the entire American system of government for this to work.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're going to end up voting everyone out as soon as possible if you felt like you've been betrayed, right?
Right.
So in a democracy, this kind of approach doesn't really work. If you want to read the bill, it's actually available online. Mm-hmm. It is 410 pages long.
Yeah.
The first 197 pages of that have been struck through.
I do think that, I think that in light of recent events in Egypt and some of the other countries in the Middle East where, the Tunisian protests, I think, have sort of helped some momentum in that regard. I think that it may cause people to give this bill another look, either, you know, go through and revise it again, or strike it down and start over from scratch.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of those things where an actual real life event or a series of events may add some perspective.
Yeah. If you want to read it, it's S period 3480. That is the number associated with this particular act. And it's long, you know, and it's full of legalese because, I mean, it's, you know, you got to remember we got lawyers running this country. So that'll happen at any rate. But it's good to actually be aware of what's happening. And like Chris said, there's actually been a couple of documents that have come out trying to, clear up matters about this act and what is covered versus what isn't covered. You were talking about one that was released in February, correct?
Yes.
The one I have was actually released back in June of 2010. It's yep. called Myth versus Reality.
Exactly. They keep having to clear up a lot of the issues.
I'm sure they use a lot of the same verbiage because it's the yeah. same questions over and over.
I'm sure.
And that, I mean, it's a very emotionally charged topic. So absolutely. It's understandable.
Yes. And yeah, whether or not you necessarily feel that having access to the internet is a human right, it's hard to deny that it's a seriously emotional issue. People want, at least they want access to the internet, if
right.
not need access to the internet. So it's definitely something that's going to concern people. And I wanted to add, if I may.
Sure.
If you're looking for this, you'll have an easy time finding it if you go to the Library of Congress's website. You can also look for all kinds of legislation, United States legislation. It's called Thomas, in the spirit of Thomas Jefferson, goes the quote at the top of the page. But it's http://. There's no W's here. So it's just Thomas, THOMAS.LOC, that's Library of Congress, .gov, Thomas.LOC.gov, and you can look up the status of different bills. You could see which legislators have introduced what legislation. It's actually a pretty interesting tool. It's very, very useful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an easy way to track this one down if you're interested in doing it. They even list the top five weekly pieces of legislation people are looking up, and I would imagine that this one is one of them.
Yeah, I'm sure it will rank pretty high up there. But
at least this week.
Let's conclude just by saying, remember, according to the Act, this isn't about shutting off the internet. It's about protecting various parts of the infrastructure from cyber attacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's debatable about whether or not that could be extended to the point that it would affect all Americans across
right.
the United States. So, I mean, I'm not saying that those worries are completely unfounded. I'm just saying that I think it unlikely to see that scenario happen.
Right, right. And I think now that it's become something more in the public eye, people are going to take note, and you'll see people writing their legislators and saying, you know, what is going on with this
right.
bill? So I think it'll probably be in the news, and we'll be seeing more clarification
and we'll
or
probably have
movement
a
on it.
630-page version of the act to read next time we talk about this.
Yes.
Because that's the way we work. So if you guys have any opinions, I'm sure a lot of you have opinions on this subject.
Yes.
I have no doubt. Please let us know. You can let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, or you can send us an email. That address is TechStuff@HowStuffWorks.com, and Chris and I will talk to you again, assuming the government lets us, really soon.
Nice.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.